Get ready for the Magic Valley Prepcast on IdahoSports.com.
That's right. Welcome in. It is the Magic Valley Prepcast on IdahoSports.com, presented by No Vape Idaho, Idaho Public Television's campaign to raise awareness about the dangers of youth vaping. Be smart. Don't start. We are here to talk the biggest stories of District 4 athletics and activities most weeks in, most weeks out here in the great state of Idaho. My name is Brandon Bainey, and we are joined by our Magic Valley resident and expert, Scott Burton. What's going on, Scotty?
Hey, what's going on there, Brandon? Kind of been a minute since we did this. It seems like, state tournaments get in the way, life gets in the way, somebody decides to get sick, that gets in the way, and then next thing you know, here we are.
Yeah, so no show last week. We were planning on doing it, and I got sick. It was one of those things where I had reached the finish line, right, of the winter sports season and all those work obligations, and then my body was like, okay, now we're going to get sick, and it was bad. I could barely talk. I'm still kind of nasally a little bit, and I felt like a zombie, where, like, just walking down the stairs to my couch was like an ordeal, and I'm like, man, I'm spent.
Yeah. It tends to happen. I mean, as soon as the season's over, every time I was coaching, it was like right at the end of the season, after all the stress and the mental stuff kind of goes away, your body just says, all right, peace out. And then you're done for a few days. So I get it.
Yeah. So we will use this week's show as one final look back at the winter sports season that was, because the last time it was just you and I on the Magic Valley Prepcast, Scott. State wrestling hadn't happened yet. And state boys basketball hadn't happened yet. And so we got a lot to talk about here before we officially turn the page to spring sports. And I know that's been a disaster so far in your neck of the woods.
I tell you what, it has been an absolute freaking nightmare. I mean, the amount of time that we are spending right now on trying to get spring sports off the ground has been insane. My schedules that I have printed out are crossed out. It looks like my trig final, you know, it's just like, and erased and the arrows. And it's just like, I don't even know what's happening anymore. So we still have not played a baseball game, or tomorrow. Softball has seen the dirt 4 times. So it is just a nightmare. And then you try to reschedule it all and nobody's got room because you only have so many days. So, I don't know. Good times.
Yeah, a mess as always. The state wrestling tournament was a great competition, Scott. It kind of ended in a messy way at the 4A state meet, though, where we talked about coming in, right? It was going to come down to Minico and Bishop Kelly for the 4A wrestling title. And it was two totally different strategies. It was basically quantity of Minico versus quality of Bishop Kelly, where Minico was bringing the most athletes to the state wrestling tournament, and they were going to use their numbers approach. And yeah, they would have some individual champions, but they were going to fill in the second, third, fourth, fifth place finishers to pile up the points. Bishop Kelly came in with a smaller contingent, but their guys are all studs. And if they could squeeze every last point out of their stable of studs, they were going to be in the mix. And we never got to see which strategy ultimately would have paid off, Scott, because for the first time since 1969, we had a tie. And so we ended up with co-champions, Bishop Kelly and Minico, both tied atop the podium. And so a very unusual situation, to say the least.
Oh, I mean, no doubt about it. The odds of tying like that are astronomical. And they did it. But what's even more crazy is Blackfoot and Lakeland tied for third at 125 and a half each. I mean, what are the odds of all of that happening? Slim to none. But you know what? That tournament worked out just like we talked. It was going to. It was going to be the star power of Bishop Kelly and all of their elite nationally ranked wrestlers taking on just the volume and the army of Minico. And, you know, Bishop Kelly, 6 champions, Minico, 3 champions. So it all worked out kind of how we thought it was going to. And I mean, we didn't predict a tie or anything, but, what an awesome wrestling match between two powerhouses, and there was a distant gap between the tie for first and the tie for third. So it was a two-team race all the way.
Yeah, Minico and Bishop Kelly both end up tying with a total of 248 points each. And like you said, Scott, BK had six individual champions, 10 placers overall. Mm-hmm. Minico had just three individual champions, but 13 placers. And that was enough to make up the gap. It essentially came down to BK had the lead and they were out of competitors. And because when you wrestle at state, they go in order of weight, right? Lowest weight to highest weight. And it came down to the 220 pound final. It was, you know, the second to last final of the entire 4A tournament. Garrett Vale of Minico is competing, and he not only gets the win, but he scores enough points for Minico to close the gap and end up tying Bishop Kelly. So for BK, they had the lead and they had to sit back and watch Garrett Vale of Minico tie it up. What would you rather, which position would you rather be in, Scott? The team that's got the lead and you got to sit back and bite your nails, or the team that's trying to chase and go in and try and topple the team that's in first?
Oh, I would definitely be in Minico's position. I mean, you look at that situation, Minico, we talked about, had three champions, correct? And they were all boom, boom, boom. And so this perfect storm had to happen for Minico coming down the stretch, you know, with Spencer Pease at 182, who collected his first ever state title. And then at 195, Sonner Cranny got his second. And then it was Garrett Vale who got his third. And all three of them needed to happen in order to catch Bishop Kelly. But I would much rather be in Minico's shoes, control my own destiny, right? I don't want to sit back and wait. You know, I want to go out there. I want to take it and get it done. And, you know, the drama, if you're following the scores and all that kind of stuff, was pretty cool. Because, I mean, I kind of remember back when, you know, about 3-4 years ago when Jerome won 4A state title. It came down to that final match where we were chasing Nampa and we needed our guy in the state final to collect a pin at least. And against a kid he'd never beaten. And I'll be danged if he didn't pin him. And we just went bananas and Nampa just went. So yeah, very, very, very cool. And congratulations to Minico. And you know, and I want to throw a little shout out too. Congratulations to freshman Camden Koontz from Mountain Home as well, individual state champion at 106.
Yeah, it was a really good tournament overall for Magic Valley wrestlers. You know, 4A all the way down to 2A for state wrestling. Fun fact, Scott: the last time there was a tie and there were co-champions was back in 1969. Back then, it was called the A classification. They had an A and a B, essentially. The tie came between Snake River and Minico. So this is, Minico's been used to this.
Wow. Huh. That is a little fun little fact. Nice nugget dig in there, Brandon. Yeah. So Minico involved in the last tie 85,000 years ago and then again today.
Yeah, I forgot to ask what the, so for those that are watching on the idahosports.com YouTube channel or Facebook page, we have our names displayed in a little text box below us. Scott always has a cool moniker that he comes up with, a new one every show. This time it was 99 AD. Was that the reference because it was so long between ties, or what was the?
Actually, it's just a sad day, Brandon. It's a very sad day.
I got you.
Aaron Donald announced his retirement today from the Rams, worn 99, and it just gets you right in the feelers. So today it's 99 AD.
Yep. NFL free agency is off and running. Flurry of activity, that's for sure. In the comments here, Scott, here's Sheree. So proud of my favorite Jerome seniors, Gabe Paez and Gavin Williamson.
Yeah, absolutely. And since we're talking about them, Gabe, second place, and Gavin, again, collecting another medal. He's one of those kids that I think has four medals now at the state tournament. And I mean, those two are just very good kids, good representation of Jerome wrestling. And yeah, very proud of both of those guys. Gavin, yeah, third place. And then Gabe losing in the state final at 285 in a 1-0 decision. So, but good job.
Yep, pretty remarkable. Quickly, we can highlight kind of what happened at the other state wrestling tournaments. And again, Al Fontes wrote very comprehensive recaps of everything that happened with all of the results and all of the statistics. He even broke down like the winning percentage by class. Like, oh, freshmen won this amount, this percentage, and sophomores won this percentage. I mean, he is the number cruncher for sure at IdahoSports.com.
I saw that and I'm like, holy cow, who's got that kind of time for starters? Number two, that takes a good calculator. And oh my word, that was a lot of hours to figure all that out. But what I did learn is there are some really good younger wrestlers coming up here. And we're going to see a lot of different names. And I just mentioned one from Mountain Home, who's a freshman. And, you know, of the first three classifications, the state champions were all freshmen. You know, the one out of Bishop Kelly, Holton Crane, that we, you know, talked about on the preview show a little bit. And one out of Lakeland, Carson Leonard. I mean, all three, boom, 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 freshman state title winners right out of the gate.
I forgot, Scott, before we move on from the 4A tournament, what happens to that second place trophy that the IHSAA made ahead of time? There was no second place team.
You know what? That is a really good question. Spray paint, chisel off the color. I don't know. I'm sure they're happy about that, you know, spending a little bit of extra money, but I can't imagine that happening before. I don't know. I think there's a protocol for this.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you can reach out to somebody at the IHSA and just ask like, hey, just curious, because it doesn't happen ever. You know,
what? Yeah, there's no second place trophy. There's no fourth place trophy. What do you do with them? You know?
And then you got to go get two more made, right? For first and third.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. So I'll find out.
And in this economy, oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. So it might be plastic coated. We'll see.
Right. Okay. At the 3A tournament, Buell came in and took second place overall. Fruitland just had, I mean, we talked about they were bringing, you know, almost 30 wrestlers. Scott, they had 17 placers, Fruitland did. They set a new 3A state record for most points scored in a tournament as well, 318. So for Buell, second place, still a very good outcome against what was a juggernaut Fruitland outfit.
We knew it was going to come down to those two teams, but you know what we didn't really expect was the domination of Fruitland as 17 placers, three champs. I mean, Buell showed well, distanced themselves from American Falls, who took third and put nine placers there, but just domination by Fruitland was really, really impressive.
Three individual champions for Buell. Riley Brunson wins his second career title at 145, wrapping up his high school career. And then a pair of juniors win their first, Gabe Finley, the junior, wins his first title at 195. And then senior Isaac Finley wins his first career title at 285. So it's always exciting to see new breakthroughs at state as well. Congratulations there. 2A tournament, Scott. Nobody finished in the top five in terms of the team scores. It's always tougher with 2A because it's more spread out. This is the most amount of teams competing. Most aren't bringing, you know, a full lineup. And so it can get very scattered very quickly. But Declo's Wallace Durfee won his second career title at 132 pounds, only a junior. So he'll be going for number three next year. Congratulations to Wallace Durfee.
Yeah, absolutely. Good showing by him. And it's always cool to see these kids have a chance to defend a title. And if you look up and down the roster, so a lot of these upperclassmen are two-time winners, three-time winners. Very seldom will you get a four-time winner. But, I mean, there's a lot of these repeat champions. And then you get guys like we talked about, like, you know, Garrett Vail out of Minico, a three-time winner. I remember one Gavin's brother, Zeke Williamson, he was a four-time state champion in Jerome. I mean, think about that as a freshman, winning it all 4 years in a row, and then you're bouncing weight classes because you're, you know, growing. And it's just really, really impressive. And especially with the popularity that wrestling has gotten and the involvement, there's a lot of kids involved. That is a tough thing to do.
Yep. And then wrapping up on the girls' side, Scott, you talked about this great group of freshmen. It's more prevalent than ever on the girls' side. We had two freshmen from the Magic Valley win titles. Jerome's Olivia Bezdacek took the 120 title, helped Jerome finish fifth in the team race on the girls' side. And then Roxy Sheen from Buell wins the 138-pound title as well. And then, of course, Amy Hartman from Mountain Home finishes her season with the win at 235, caps her season with her second title. So way to go, Amy Hartman from Mountain Home as well.
Yeah, very cool. We talked about both of those freshmen on our last podcast. And, you know, this group of freshmen coming up, they're the ones now that have been trained. You know, they're the ones that have been taking the clinics and the camps. They're the ones that are being raised in this culture, because a lot of the upperclassmen right now are just kind of second year in it, you know, those kind of things. We're now starting to see that group of female wrestlers come up that are absolutely legit. And that Bezdacek girl from Jerome, I mean, great girl to begin with, a great student, great person. But when you step onto the mat with her, she will take you down, and she is good. So you talk about those four-time potential state champions. You got two of them right there with Buell and Jerome.
Yep, for sure. All right, so that wraps up the wrestling season in the state of Idaho in terms of high school. There's always off-season competitions and whatnot, and we'll keep you apprised of all of that on idahosports.com. Before we get to boys state basketball, if you're from Idaho and between the ages of 13 and 18 years old, enter the No Vape video contest to expose the shadowy commercial tobacco marketing tactics behind vaping. Just create and upload your 90-second vape bashing masterpiece, and you could win a portion of the more than $10,000 in prize money being awarded. Deadline to enter is April 1st. Winners will be announced May 1st. Raise your voice about the dangers of vaping and win big cash prizes from No Vape Idaho. For more information, just type No Vape Idaho, K-N-O-W, No Vape Idaho into your favorite web browser, and you can go from there. All right, Scott, biggest story from the Magic Valley in boys basketball was the year of the musher continues. Yes. Camas County, after getting so close and almost getting that apple, they finally come through and win the 1A-D2 state championship, their first title in some time, and they beat Kendrick. Got a little revenge after losing to Kendrick in the football championship, because basically all the guys that played football play basketball for each of those schools as well, and it was a game that was never really close. I mean, Camas County kind of started hot and finished hotter. First title since 1974, and they win 56-42 the final.
Yeah, boy, what a great year of the musher this was. I mean, 1974. I mean, you were just like, what, 12, right?
Right. That's what my hairline suggests, but oh, okay. Not really.
Sorry. I was actually alive back then, Brandon. I was 4 years old. So, it was been a long time for Camas. And, you know, this is a Camas team that really was number one from start to finish, you know, throughout the year. I mean, obviously Kendrick has got something to say about that. They did in football, and you can bet that was a little bit of a reminder to Camas that, hey, we're not going to go down to Kendrick again. But, you know, I really think this Camas season was really solidified when they lost to Dietrich. When they lost to Dietrich back in February 21st or whatever it was, they lost a one-point game. And I think that woke them up. I think it really kind of grounded them a little bit, because sometimes the best thing that can happen to a team before they get to state, especially if they've been on some sort of winning streak or having a lot of success, is to take one on the chops and get a loss just to refocus you just a little bit. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that's what's happened to Camas, because, I mean, they lost three games on the season. That one to Dietrich I'm talking about. They lost to 2A Wendell, and they lost to 4A Emmett. And that's it, you know. And when that's going on, you can get a real, you know, kind of a false sense of security that, hey, we're all that, and all we got to do is show up and win. But I'm glad it worked out the way they did. Defensively, boy, did they play a really, really good tournament. And then they really showcased that defense in that last game.
Yeah, I did get a little context from the Mushers on that loss to Dietrich at Districts. Right before they were going to play that game, they found out that Tyson Tupper, who had been a starter all year long, was going to miss the rest of the season with a back injury. And yep. So I think the team, just in the headspace sense, yep. wasn't locked in. You know, they were thinking about their teammate.
And, yes.
And so they did lose by one to Dietrich. And then, like you said, that got them refocused. Yep. At State, we talk about the Smith twins all year, right? Troy and Tristan, they're seniors. Mm-hmm. Troy was the MVP of the Sawtooth Conference in the regular season, and kind of, I think, overall, the more regarded player. But it was Tristan who shined yeah. brightest at State. He was the IdahoSports.com player of the game for the championship game, and he was also the MVP of the tournament.
Yeah, what a tournament for him. Averaged about 18 points a game of those three games. Pulled a few rebounds and assists, and you know, he was doing a whole lot for that team. And yeah, tournament MVP for him. And first team is, you know, Emmett and Troy. Not Emmett Smith and Troy Aikman, you know, for those wondering. But
yeah. Emmett Palin and Troy Smith. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. Both first team of the tournament, and Trevor Tews, honorable mention. So, you know, they had some really good performances, did Camas, you know, throughout this tournament. And, you know, that was showcased, I think, really in that final game where they put three guys into double figures and just slammed the door right away, you know, up by 11 over Kendrick in that first quarter. And it just never was in question. They won every quarter of that game en route to a 14-point resounding win.
Two other teams from the Magic Valley came home with trophies as well, Scott. On the consolation side of the bracket at the 4A tournament, Twin Falls beats Blackfoot mm-hmm. in the consolation final Saturday morning, 62-58. Very fun, entertaining game. The Bruins come home with the yeah. trophy. Minico goes 2-0 at the 4A state tournament. But you were on the call for the 4A state tournament for IdahoSports.com. You were at that Twin Falls Blackfoot game, and it sounded like it was a fun one.
It definitely was. You know, you get into Trophy Saturday and you just don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to get as far as, you know, the give a crap meter sometimes, the exhaustion meter, you know, it's the last game for these seniors, so anything goes. And it was a very heated game. It was chippy. It was physical. And Twins, the one that just kind of came out on top. I mean, that was a fun 4A tournament to call overall.
Yep. It was really fun to see Twin Falls persevere and get that consolation trophy. And then at the 3A tournament, Kimberly gets to the consolation final and they pull off the win over Homedale by 20, 72-52. The more important story was the loser out game on Friday, where they finally got the better of Filer, 57-55. And that was a game that was a little chippy, had a little, you know, action going back and forth in it, but Kimberly knocked out their district rivals from Filer.
Yeah. You know, when you see somebody that many times and now you've got to play at state, it's like, you know, I bet everybody's just a little irritated, and you could see how those things happen. And Kimberly, you bet, knocked them off by two, and then advanced and took home a consolation trophy. Meanwhile, Filer was two and barbecue.
Yep. The 1A D1 tournament, Scott, this is the tournament I was at. Oakley and Valley both fell in very close first round games. Oakley fell to Butte County by 6, 46-40. They had the lead at halftime and just went ice cold in the second half. Valley fell to Potlatch 54-42. And then they both experienced really close games with different outcomes on loser out Friday. First, Oakley was playing Victory Charter, had the lead with 10 seconds to go, but Noah Palomares for Victory Charter gets fouled with 7 seconds to go, makes both free throws to give Victory Charter a 1-point lead at 59-58. Oakley then has a chance at a last second shot, but just wasted too much time trying to set up the play and had to put up a rushed shot as time expired. And so they fell by one. Then Valley in their looser out game opposite, they were tied with Liberty Charter 48-48 with about 5 seconds to go. They inbounded to Pedro Robles, who went the length of the floor, scored the game winning layup with like a second to go. And so Valley kept their season alive 50-48, the final. They ultimately fell to Victory Charter in that consolation final, but man, for both Oakley and Valley, one experienced an agonizing defeat and one experienced a really thrilling victory, but both games came down to the final 10 seconds, basically.
Yeah, I mean, some great, great games. You couldn't ask for more if you were a spectator or a broadcaster, but, you know, heartbreak for, you know, Oakley in particular, just that close to Trophy Saturday and you're done. And that's the goal of any team when you get there, is you just win one game. Just win one game, and then you can play for a trophy. And that's really all it takes. And the two and dones are just tough to swallow.
Yeah. I did learn a couple of cool stories about the Valley boys basketball team and doing the tournament prep for it from Coach Brian Hardy that I wanted to share here on the PrepCast as well. It was a really tight brotherhood of players this year at Valley, to the point where after every single game, Scott, in the locker room, they would all get together and sing "Lean on Me." They would do it after every game in the locker room. Coach Hardy said, you know, they don't really have rhythm or harmony, but they do it every single game and sing it. That's kind of a cool deal.
Well, that's pretty cool. And I can just picture that. They're not really married to the beat, you know, just kind of doing their own thing. But that's really cool. And good for them. It's amazing how those little things bring a team closer to together. It just kind of lets your guard down and things that those kids are going to remember. But congratulations to Valley for, you know, at least getting to Trophy Saturday and making some noise.
Yep. The other cool story with Valley is they kind of took on this mantra of epic. Every possession is critical, every practice or every game, insert a new P word. Every practice is critical. Every possession is critical. Every play is critical. And players would take turns coming up with a new P word to put into the epic. Every blank is critical. I really like that too.
That one's new. That one I had not heard of before, but that one is really cool. I like that one.
Yeah.
They got my wheels turning now.
I know, right? You're trying to think of good P words to use, right?
Right. First one that popped into my head was pneumonia. So I know that's not it. And it's not even phonetically correct.
Oh, man. So, yeah, those are just some of the fun things we get to learn about as we're preparing. And again, that's what separates IdahoSports.com from anybody else that's broadcasting at state, is we know these players. We know these communities. We know these coaches. We know those backstories. You're just not going to get that anywhere else.
Right. Right. You know, and we're heading into spring sports and, you know, it doesn't necessarily slow down. It's a different vibe than what we're coming out of with winter sports, but the stories are still there. And, you know, we encourage everybody to send us those stories or make us, you know, alert to them so we can kind of do our due diligence and dig them out and flush them out and give these kids a little bit of recognition, because otherwise they become numbers on a page, and that is not what we're about.
Yep. So you can email either one of us, Brandon@IdahoSports.com, Scott@IdahoSports.com. If there is a spring sports story, athlete, coach, something that isn't getting the attention or the spotlight and is deserving of it, we're always looking for ideas and submissions. Again, you can email either one of us, Scott@IdahoSports.com or Brandon@IdahoSports.com. And we love to shine that spotlight on all the great things that are happening in the Magic Valley. All right, Scott, we also wrap up every single Magic Valley or most Magic Valley prep casts with Scott's thoughts. Now, it's been a while since we've done one of these because, well, we've had our state tournament preview specials, and so and we haven't had a regular broadcast schedule. So as a refresher to everybody, Scott's Thoughts is a segment we came up with earlier this fall, and essentially it's a philosophical essay. Essentially, Scott, I give you a topic. It could relate to athletics, it could relate to life. It's for adults and kids alike, and it's basically a message that really gets you thinking, and then hopefully it's good advice and good tips that then we can all apply to our lives as well.
Yeah, and I cannot be happier with the response that we've gotten, you know, for this. It has really taken off more so than I thought it would. And I mean, just everywhere you go, you're getting a comment from, hey, Scott's Thoughts, or what's the topic this week, or hey, saw that was awesome, whatever. And we even had coaches email in to us that showed it to their teams. And, you know, it's just one of those things that we're doing that is, I mean, it's fun for me, because I got a lot of stuff up here and I've got thoughts on everything, but to get it out there, to make a difference, at least make people think about it, you know, that's what it's all about. Makes it different, makes it fun.
Yep. We've covered topics ranging from perseverance to sportsmanship to mental health to motivation to the grass is greener syndrome. And we have all of these available. If you go to the idahosports.com YouTube channel, there is a Scott's Thoughts playlist. We have all of our previous Scott's Thoughts there, and you can tune into all of those little pearls of wisdom. But Scott, the topic you've been working on for quite some time now has to do with mental health a little bit, and basically admitting that you need help, right? That can be the hardest thing sometimes, is saying those three words, right? I need help. But it's the first step that you have to take.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of those things that is, it's hard for people in general to ask for help. And because we're taught at a young age just to be autonomous, you know, to figure it out. The close-knit communities that, you know, maybe we grew up with, or at least we envisioned from back in the 50s or whatever it was back then, they're not so prevalent anymore. And so people are more isolated than I think ever before. And that leads to, you know, where I take this thing, and that's to a mental health issue. You know, and it's a delicate topic. It's not one that's taken lightly. I mean, there's a varied amount of opinions on this, but I do think it's worth addressing. And until we can figure out why all this is happening, we can't help anybody, you know? And so that's kind of where I took it this week.
Yeah. And I'll usually grab the topic from something that I've noticed in the headlines or something that's happening in my life. And the whole reason I gave you this topic initially, Scott, was we did a wrestling feature story on a young man from Lewiston, Hoyt Haas, who, by the way, is now a 3-time state champion wrestler. But when he was younger, he was struggling with the pressure of competing and the pressure of succeeding. And he attempted to take his own life. And then that fortunately didn't occur. And once that happened, he finally admitted, like, hey, I need help. And there's so many kids and young adults that never get to that step where you say, hey, I need help. And so that's why we introduced the topic. It's a very important one. And so here is this week's Scott's Thought.
We live in a world that's under attack. We live in a world where destruction supersedes construction, and where everything from our morals, our values, our work ethic, our self-respect, our self-esteem is being challenged at every turn. For the first time in history, people are dying from eating too much rather than too little, as 75% of American people are overweight. And we are in a time where more people commit suicide than those killed in war and by criminals combined. And in every age group, more people are on antidepressants than ever before. And that number continues to climb. You know, it's true, we are under attack, but it's not from a foreign enemy. It's from within ourselves and with each other, and under attack from a fast-paced world where There is so much noise. And the collateral damage is our mental health, our coping mechanisms, and our ability to ask for help. You know, when this topic came up, I had someone write to me and ask me to share my thoughts. And I knew that discussing this delicate topic of mental health, I'd have to be very careful because this is such a deep subject with so many layers and moving parts, it can also be polarizing. So what I have to say, not everyone's going to agree with, but I hope it does make you think. So let's start with this. For those of us who grew up in the pre-technology era, the pre-cell phone era, you may subscribe to the idea that our kids who have mental health issues, they just need to toughen up and get over it. Well, although there may be some truth to that in certain situations, and that may have worked for us, what we have to realize is that our kids are not growing up in the same world that we did. They are born into a place that's much nastier, much noisier, and much more cluttered than we could ever imagine, like it or not. And what is suffering is their mental health and their ability to cope with all of this noise. In order to fully discuss something as sensitive as this, you need to try and identify why this is happening. And although there are a myriad of reasons and they all can be tied together, there are a few that begs the question, what is different about now than before? Of course, we can't list all the reasons our kids are in trouble because it could be anything from socioeconomic reasons, family issues, awkwardness, shyness. But you know what? Those things, they've been around forever. My question is, what has changed that has made this epidemic more challenging than years before? Well, before I jump into a couple of things that are on my mind, let me preface it all by saying this. Being a kid these days, it's not easy. There's constant pressure to find out what makes you happy, what makes you sad. You're feeling things for the first time, discovering who you are in a world that's constantly challenging your identity. You're being exposed to social media in a world which can be brutal and misleading. You have an unfiltered internet at your fingertips with all the information you could ever desire, yet you know nothing. You have adult content, and that has become your normal, and childhood is lost. And you live in a time where there has never been a greater need for parents, but there's never been a time where parents have been more absent. Now factor in hormones, drama, family problems, bullying, classwork, extracurriculars, and you've got a powder keg of problems that could explode at any time. And sometimes it does. I think we all would agree that the most obvious contributing factor to the decline of our kids' mental health is technology and social media. And according to the Common Sense Census, teens use social media, phones, computers, tablets for entertainment more than 8 hours a day on average. Since the boom of social media, we've seen a dramatic increase in teenage depression, where half of high schoolers even admit that it's because of social media, and they admit that they feel persistently sad or hopeless to the point that they couldn't take part in their normal activities. Yet, we allow them to maintain numerous social media accounts and use their own discretion when it comes to the use of technology. And what we tend to forget is this: technology is a useful servant, but a dangerous master. And once we've succumbed to our new ruler, the damage it's doing to our brains is irreversible and directly affecting our mental well-being. You know, we all know that studies have shown that our devices are directly tied to increased depression, anxiety, and loss of self-worth. And with a constant stream of information, the unrealistic expectations, the bullying, all of it taking place on social media, pretty soon, our kids aren't even comfortable in their own skin. They don't like themselves. And this is something that we didn't have to deal with. And yet, it's every single day for our kids. And COVID didn't do our mental state any favors either. We made social isolation the norm and said farewell to human interaction, face-to-face communication, and in-person education. And the way that we responded to this made us afraid of our own shadows and each other. And while adults were finishing all of Netflix, our kids were glued to their screens in further isolation. And we didn't think that we'd have some consequences from this. Well, we can't begin to help our kids if we don't recognize what they're going through. They already feel alone. And the result is isolationism, one of the main catalysts of negative mental health. We've replaced people with technology. I mean, you go into a grocery store and we have more self-checkout stations than ever before. We don't get to talk to anyone anymore. Yet we give a shy child a device and allow them to further retreat rather than learn basic human interaction. And we wonder why they don't talk to anyone when they're in trouble. Human interaction is the fuel that keeps our souls alive, but we deprive ourselves of it. Another layer to this complex subject is something that is commonly overlooked, yet can be one of the most damaging. And it's something that we may not even know we are doing. Our society has a tendency to dramatize and sensationalize just about everything. And we are doing this with mental illness. We carelessly fling words around like suicide, depression, anxiety. I'm going to commit suicide. I have depression. I have anxiety. And what we don't realize is that we can end up over-normalizing these issues and create a culture with distorted notions of what is and what is not a mental illness. Experiencing depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, OCD, or bipolar disorder, that's not supposed to be normal. But feeling sadness, occasional anxiety, or being overwhelmed is a common part of life. Unfortunately, we've lost coping mechanisms and we've normalized these conditions to the extent that they're often overlooked compared to a common cold and not treated seriously. As a result, those genuinely in need of help may not seek it because their experiences are perceived as unworthy of treatment, because now it's normal to feel this way. Now, I'm certainly not saying that we should forego awareness, nor am I saying we shouldn't have conversations about mental health. Not saying that at all. But what I am saying is we need to be cognizant of what we deem to be normal, because people all over are openly sharing their mental health struggles, encouraging others not to feel ashamed of their own conditions, but to accept them as an integral part of their identity. And I don't agree with that at all. Mental illness doesn't define a person. It's merely a hurdle they confront. Yet we have this obsession of attaching a label to everyone, including ourselves. And that quickly becomes our identity. And we gravitate toward that label as it gives us comfort, because in this constant search for self where loneliness dominates, this self-diagnosis tells us who we are. And that is dangerous. And that's another thing our kids are dealing with that we never did. Something else to consider. A lot of those who need help won't ask because they don't feel like anyone listens to them. And can you blame them? We aren't the best listening society in the world. We're too self-absorbed, because most of us, we don't listen to understand. We listen to respond. And thus, we forget that one of the most precious gifts we can give anyone is our full attention. Again, further pushing our kids away, alone. Another ingredient in this is how our kids are trained for instant results to problems, instant solutions, instant gratification. And when it isn't there, sometimes they act like spoiled toddlers because they haven't been taught patience or resiliency. And that directly ties to our mental health. I feel sad, fix it. I feel mad, hit it. And the art of thought and reflection and problem solving are old school ways of the past. They don't know a different world because we haven't taught it to them. Look, I say all of these things just so we know what our kids are dealing with, and it's overwhelming at times. And without a positive network of real connection, strong parents or family, our kids, well, they're going to get their information and their self-worth from anyone or anything that will influence them. And that's a big part of our mental health crisis. So what do we do? What can we possibly do to help our kids' mental health in this messed up and misguided world? Well, the answer for me, go old school and make them play. A new theory suggests that part of the rise in teen mental health crisis is that our kids, they don't play. They aren't outside engaged in unsupervised play. Ask any adult and they'll tell you that when they played outside as a kid, they played all day and were told to come home when the street lights came on. Little did we know that we were onto something. Okay, times are different now and maybe we don't follow those exact instructions, but outdoor play increased our autonomy. It decreased phobias. It reduced future anxiety by increasing confidence that we can deal effectively with emergencies. And even though the data suggests all of this, we still don't make our kids do it. And it makes no sense because exercise is the most underutilized antidepressant there is. Another thing we can do is be present. Be present as parents, friends, coaches, teachers. Be present as people. Unplug. Look up. Detach. Enjoy the silence. Decrease the clutter. And have actual conversations about these issues without normalizing them. And give our kids the tools to cope and not just the medication to deal. And lastly, engage in positive self-talk, because the way that you speak to yourself matters the most. Too many times we let our kids get away with, I suck, I'm no good, I can't deal with this. And all it does is reinforce the feelings of inadequacy and loneliness. And it's that feeling of being alone that eventually tips the scales in the wrong direction. I'm a dad of three girls. And I've always believed that a girl's first love should always be her daddy. However, if I'm going to make that happen, I have to make sure that they love themselves. So when they were little, I stood with them while they brushed their teeth and got ready for bed. And before I tucked them in, I made them look into the mirror and say something to themselves about something that they liked about themselves. So they went to bed with something positive in their minds. You see, positive self-talk can change a person. But the mind believes, the body will follow. So don't let a day go by where you don't tell yourself or others for that matter how awesome they are, because it matters. And if you put the right stuff in your heart, the right stuff will come out. In closing, the mental health of our children is not anything to take lightly. Our kids are exposed to more junk than any other time in history. Their overstimulated minds are constantly racing and their self-worth is always in question. Our job is to stop the madness. Teach them coping mechanisms and social skills, but most importantly, be present and listen. Our kids need models, not critics. They're like wet cement, and whatever falls on them leaves an impression. So give them smiles and not frustration. Teach them lessons, not embarrassment. Instill resilience, not defeat. And always let them know that they are strong and they matter. And that no matter what, make them know that they will never be alone. And those are Scott's thoughts.
Wow. The wait was worth it. Those were very poignant thoughts delivered, and you covered a lot of different aspects of this issue. What really stuck out to me the most there, Scott, was the fact that everybody normalizes everything now, and it's okay to strive for improvement, right? Sure. Instead of just saying, "Oh, yeah, this is what I have, and that's okay." Like, that part is important, but there's an improvement part of it too, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, we live in a society that works on the extremes. Everything is so extreme. You know, there's no middle ground, and middle ground's boring. And because we live in this sensationalized world, we have to go to this side or to this side. And what we do is we over-normalize things that can be just reeled in just a little bit. Because, I mean, there are a lot of kids out there that just think, well, I guess what I'm feeling is normal. I don't need help. And then it just kind of grows and it magnifies. And next thing you know, we've got a problem, you know, and none of that, what I said, is to diminish the mental health issue. It's just that, hey, you've got to get control of certain aspects of it. And I think that's one that is, you know, causing some problems.
Yep. Well, Scott, in the comments here, good friend of the program, Callie Gillette, that was fire. There you go.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Yep, for sure. So, that was a great Scott's thoughts, Scott. And now the way we do it here on the show is I give you next week's topic. I get your kind of just quick snap judgment thoughts on it. And then we give you the week to formulate more cogent thoughts beyond that. And so for our next Scott's thoughts topic, Scott, I've really been thinking about lately communication or the lack thereof. I've seen a lot of relationships deteriorate, familial relationships, romantic relationships, working relationships deteriorate because of a lack of communication, and specifically a lack of addressing issues when they first occur. So you sit on it and you let it linger and you let it stew. And I was thinking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and you know, they worked together for 20 years, but there was always lingering resentments that they never fully addressed. And I feel like if they had in the moment, maybe they could have repaired the relationship. And so that's what I want you to dive into next week, is addressing those issues when they first occur rather than punting it down the road.
Yeah. And that's a good one too, because I've seen a rise in the lack of communication or the lack of ability to communicate. I mean, countless times I've had people in my office that have an issue with this person. They've got an issue with this person, but have they ever talked to each other? And the answer is no. And it's like, we're so kind of caught up in this gossipy, he said, she said, without ever confronting anything. Because I think part of our issue is that we have become accustomed to just running our mouths anytime that we want. And a lot of times on these platforms that we're using, we can be anonymous doing so. So it really does affect our filter. And what that does is it transcends into personal relationships, to where we won't confront anything because we'll just hide. And communication, true communication, never does happen. And if you could just get people to sit down and talk, they would find that the issue really isn't that big.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see where you take this next week, Scott, but that'll be next week's Scott's Thoughts. And next week we will be bringing you some of the biggest spring sports stories, provided, you know, spring sports are actually occurring and taking place. I've already got a few ideas in the hopper I'm working on, Scott.
So okay. Okay, good. Because we may not have any games to talk about if we get like the fifth of winter down here. So, and it could happen.
Yep, for sure. So good to be back at it. We will be with you every week, you know, from here on out through the spring sports season. And again, we're always on the lookout for great stories that are happening in the Magic Valley. You can email either one of us, scott@idahosports.com or brandon@idahosports.com. We'll let Scott go grieve Aaron Donald's retirement from the Los Angeles Rams, and we'll be back here again next week for another edition of the Magic Valley Prepcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. For Scott Burton, I'm Brandon Maney, and we will see you next time on idahosports.com.